The UK housing market has been in a state of turmoil, with mortgage deals taken off the market and interest rates predicted to continue rising.
Yeah, we've seen a real slowdown where house prices are higher. Higher rates have a bigger impact on affordability. So Scotland, the northeast of England...
Housing markets across Europe have seen tensions rise in the past few months as the combination of high inflation and high interest rates is making it harder for consumers to make their loan payments and forcing them to cut down on spending.
And what we find is that by the end of this year, around one-fourth of consumers may be forced to cut down their consumption. And these consumers would hold around 30% of aggregate consumption in the economy. My name is Laura Valderrama. I'm a senior economist and the macrofinancial expert in the European Department at the Fund.
Great, thank you very much, and welcome to the podcast. Laura Valderrama is also a co-author of a new research paper that takes a close look at the troubling trends in Europe's housing market. So we, in the United States at least, hear about every up and down in the real estate market, especially since the crash in 2008. People are highly aware of this. But we don't hear so much about the European housing market, which your new research paper suggests that is at a turning point. So what is going on in the European housing market?
Thank you. So I guess maybe to understand the current situation in Europe, I think we could take a broader perspective and trying to understand the behavior of the housing market over the last decades. And what we have observed is that in the average housing market in Europe, prices have departed from fundamental factors, mm-hmm. such as GDP, income, interest rates, and rents. And to give you a bit of a sense of the numbers, since 2015, prices have risen by 40% in real terms.
Wow.
And in some of the countries, such as, for instance, Ireland or Hungary or Portugal, prices have more than doubled. And then we had the COVID pandemic, and we observed that despite the initial recession and also the more recent rise in mortgage rates, real house prices have actually accelerated further. And again, to give a bit of some numbers, we observed that on average, over the last 8 quarters, the average house price in Europe in real terms have increased by 4%. And that is over the trend that we observed before COVID. So in the paper, we look at a broad range of indicators that may signal overvaluation pressures. And we see that simple metrics, for example, price to income or price to rent, they actually exceed between 25 and 40% of their long-term average. So here, I guess the question is, are we concerned about overvaluation pressures?
Yeah.
And we are. And this is because if house prices exceed fundamental values, the risk of a sharp correction in housing markets increases.
Mm-hmm.
And if a real estate crisis were to occur, that would impair banks' balance sheets, that would erode consumer confidence, and therefore that would derail the economic recovery in Europe.
So we're talking about Europe across, countries across Europe and the UK as well, I assume, like, post-Brexit. Does Brexit play into this at all, one way or the other?
So we have not looked at any structural change due to Brexit in the UK. What we have observed is that in some countries, and particularly in the UK,
mm-hmm.
Over the last few months, some house prices have started to cool down. And this is mainly because of the rise in rates, particularly in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But still, across countries in Europe, what we see is that property values are too high, mortgage rates are surging, particularly in the UK again, and real income of households is squeezing because of the high inflation. And this is also increasingly posing a barrier for home ownership. So in the paper, what we do is that, including the UK actually,
mm-hmm.
We try to calculate what is the rise in the mortgage bills of a new buyer that mm-hmm. entered the market in 2022 compared to the previous year. And we observed that their mortgage bill would increase by 30% compared to previous vintages. Exactly. And this is just because of the dramatic surge on interest rates. And this is a concern to us also, because that could potentially cause some social unrest and also increase income inequality or wealth inequality, as there is a growing difference in wealth between renters and homeowners. Okay. And in fact, we have observed some big protests in countries such as Netherlands at the end of 2021, and governments and central banks are trying to intervene to ease some of the access to affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. So how well could Europe's banks, how well positioned are Europe's banks to sort of handle the potential fallout of a housing crisis? I mean, that was essentially the fundamental issue in the 2008 crisis. Is Europe looking at another possible Lehman Brothers scenario?
No, thank you for the question. So in fact, let me start saying that the housing market is very important for European banks, more than the US counterparts. The reason is that banks are heavily exposed to real estate, particularly residential real estate, more than the US counterparts. And to give you again a sense of magnitude, the size of the retail market, so which is mainly mortgage loans and also some consumer loans, so they reach around 6.6 trillion euros, which is 40% of GDP of the whole European Union.
Wow.
That's quite substantial. And also in terms of trends, we observe that banks are increasingly exposed to mortgage loans. However, the good news is that since the Lehman Brothers events, there has been implementation of a new regulatory framework, which is Basel III across Europe. And also some policymakers have been tightening macroprudential policy that has made banks more resilient from a capital perspective, as well as a liquidity perspective, and has also decreased interconnectedness across financial institutions, which means that if there was a real estate crisis in a specific country, the ripple effects propagated through the financial system would be mitigated, and that is unlike the Lehman Brothers event. But more specifically in the paper, we tried to quantify what would be the effect of a real estate correction in banks' capital position. And let me start by saying 2 points. The first point is that we in fact find that households that have low debt servicing capacity because of the cost of living crisis and rising interest rates, indeed they are more likely to default on their loans, and their probability of being arrears actually almost doubles.
Wow. So what happens to the European economy when there's a growing number of people that can't afford a payment, especially in those low income brackets?
Yeah, so I would make 2 points. So the first point is that there could be some concerns over financial stability. Mm-hmm. So we just mentioned that there could be some impact on banks' balance sheets, and that is crucial. It depends on the extent of real estate price correction. So in the paper, we estimate that if there is the overvaluation, which is around like 20% across countries, is corrected, the impact could be like around 100 basis points or even 300 basis points in some countries, which means then that some of the banks may have to breach into their capital buffers, so they will curtail credit to the real economy, and that would amplify the housing and economic downturn. So that's the first effect. And the second effect that I think that you also point to is the macroeconomic dimension, which is that consumers that struggle to service their debts, they may be forced to cut down on consumption to avoid default. And that's particularly the case for a real estate event, because they want to avoid foreclosure. And even if households are not indebted, but they do not have enough income to make their ends meet, they actually make adjust their spending behavior. And in the paper, what we do is that we try to estimate what would be the size of consumption at risk under different scenarios. Mm-hmm. And what we find is that under the IMF baseline conditions, by the end of this year, around 1/4 of consumers may be forced to cut down their consumption. And these consumers would hold around 30% of aggregate consumption in the economy. So the effect in terms of the economic recovery and the drag on growth could be quite substantial. Of course, we also run different stress scenarios, and we have a particular case which we call the worst case scenario, in which the cost of living crisis intensifies, and that would put more consumers in distress. So instead of 1/4, it would reach up to 1/3 of all consumers across Europe.
Wow. Okay, so what are you suggesting in this paper as to how governments should respond? I mean, I understand you're proposing subsidies to help people, but governments are pretty stretched at the moment. So what can they do to help in terms of averting a full-blown housing crisis?
So that's a critical question, because as you know, governments in Europe, they have deployed large fiscal packages. Yes. To try to shield consumers from rising food and energy prices. So in fact, there are some estimates that signal that across European countries, there is a package of like 770 billion euros, which is very substantial.
And this is like stemming from the pandemic and...
So this is just like starting at the end of 2021. So this is mainly when we started to have pressures in commodity markets.
So it's a pandemic and the war in Ukraine.
It's the war, yeah, that's right. So what we observe is that there is a big dispersion of packages or subsidies across European countries, and the difference stems from two factors. One is what is the amount of support that is provided to consumers, but the second one is what is the conditionality which is required to be able to access the support.
Right.
And here, as you alluded to, because we are in an environment in which there is crisis upon crisis, and fiscal capacity is reduced in many economies, and also there are ongoing fiscal consolidation efforts. So what we try to see is which type of policies could be more cost effective in terms of providing more benefits at a lower cost. And there in the paper, what we do is that we design alternative fiscal policies that differ in their level of targeting. And what we find is that policy that covers the rise in food and energy prices of the bottom third side of the population would achieve the highest cost effectiveness. So to give a bit of perspective, so we estimate that with this policy, 7% of all households could be saved from financial distress, and the cost will be around 0.8% of GDP under baseline conditions. But also what we do is that we try to take a kind of financial perspective as we're discussing. And what we see is that if we want to ensure financial stability or protect the banks from financial distress, some policies which broaden a little bit the scope, so they do include also not only the lowest income households, but also median income consumers, that would have a higher cost effectiveness ratio. And the reason is that middle class households are more likely to have mortgage loans, and these loans are bigger in size. So therefore, the mortgage debt at distress would be saved if we have a policy that covers the two bottom thirds of the population.
Laura Valderrama is a senior economist in the European Department at the IMF and a co-author of a new research paper on the, shall we say, troubled European housing market. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Again, that was IMF senior economist Laura Valderrama talking about a new research paper called European Housing Markets at a Turning Point. There's lots more in the paper, including specifics about the structural features of the mortgage market in Europe, like floating versus fixed rate mortgages, and how that plays into this looming crisis. Check it out at imf.org. And look for more IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.